in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining in today. Going to have a great program for you. Going to talk a lot today about healthcare. If you're not interested in healthcare, well, you're out of luck today because we're going to talk about it for, well, just about a full hour coming up around 3:35. We're going to have Professor David Himmelstein, Harvard Medical School professor. He doesn't like the Hillary health care plan, and so we're going to give him a chance to tell us what it is he doesn't like about it and expound upon that. And then coming up at 4:05, I think it is, Eric Lotke, the research director for Campaign for America's Future, is going to talk about the Hillary health care plan, and he's going to have a positive spin on it. So we're going to have the pro and the con on the Hillary health care plan today. And coming up at the bottom of the second hour, we have the online editor for America's Future Online, a gentleman that a lot of you have seen on TV many, many times, Bill Scheer. And Bill's going to discuss the record high oil prices, especially noting that when Junior Bush campaigned in 2000, he bragged that his foreign policy skills would ensure lower prices for all of us. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, Junior. That's worked out so well. Glad to have all of you along with us today. It's a nice day here in Southwest Florida. Hot, humid, as usual, as it always is in the middle of September. Fall hasn't set in yet. Yeah, no, it is a lot of places where you're at. That's one thing I miss about living in the north. The fall, the football season. The nice crisp air, that's always nice to head on out to the Ohio Stadium and see the Buckeyes play whoever they're playing. Always so, makes a wonderful fall day, that's for sure. News going on around the country. First of all, I've forgotten for the past couple of days. I want to thank you, Chris. Chris, you know who you are. I want to thank you very much for your letter. I appreciate it more than you know. And I'll let it go at that. I don't want to embarrass you, but Chris, I do want to thank you very much, and I thank you for your support for the program. I guess the big news today, in a lot of people's minds anyway, certainly not in mine, and it just further points out the obsessiveness of our media, and they just drive me crazy. OJ, 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 oh my God. Is it huge news that a has-been football player, a guy who most likely is a murderer, who's a bum, a rat, no good to society, in my opinion, that's what I think of O.J. Simpson. Is it big news that he breaks in somebody's hotel room in where was it, Las Vegas, and he and a bunch of guys threatened to rough some guys up if they don't give back a suit and a picture of him picture of him and somebody, J. Edgar Hoover, I think it was. Now there's a pair. J. Edgar Hoover and O.J. Simpson. Is that news? Is that something that deserves to be at the top of the news of each hour? And that's what we're hearing. I see here, he's been freed on $125,000 bond, or going to be freed on $125,000 bond. Stuff like this happens every day, all across the country, all around the world. It's of little or no consequence to our society on the whole. No consequence whatsoever. Other than the fact a lot of people would like to see O.J. Simpson thrown in the brig near the clink. Yeah. But here we have the news media, all of them. I think the DA in Vegas said there were 21 satellite TV trucks parked out in front of the courthouse there. All over O.J. Simpson. Somebody please explain that to me, because I do not understand. I do not understand stories like this. I do not understand the Anna Nicole Smith stories. Maybe I'm different, and I guess I am. Because if people didn't like these stories, they wouldn't be at the top of the news. These news companies know this. They know the public is terribly interested in Anna Nicole Smith and O.J. Simpson and... God, I hate to admit I'm such a geek when it comes to Britney Spears, the Lohan girl, Lindsay Lohan. I'm grabbing at straws here. All these Hollywood stars that go to rehab and all that. Those stories wouldn't be at the top of the news if the companies didn't know that it helps their bottom line tremendously and that people are riveted by the news of these actors and celebrities. I'll bet you the public knows 10 times more about the story of O.J. Simpson and his escapades here of the past week than they know about, let's pick a story. What story? Oh, the Senate bill. The vote at the Senate to try and restore the detainee rights, habeas corpus. I bet not one out of 50 knows anything about that. A terribly important story. Something that's important to all of us. Will affect all of us sooner or later. It affects our freedoms. Because, you see, that not only pertains to guys locked up in Guantanamo. It could affect you, and it could affect me. And yet, everybody's watching the O.J. Simpson story. Covering it live, waiting the helicopters outside, waiting to see when he leaves the courthouse. Wouldn't it be something if he got into a white Bronco and dove down the street? But it's just fascinating to me. It really is. Help me understand that. Do any of you understand it? I do not. I do not understand the public's obsession with these celebrities. I do not understand why people run up to them and as though they're gods someplace. Oh, my God, let me have your autograph. Let me have your picture. I don't get it. It just doesn't make sense to me. Never did. Does it make sense to you? If it does, you're welcome to give us a call. And even if it doesn't, you're welcome to give us a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254 is the number to call today if you'd like to join in on the program. Do get your questions together about health care. We'll be talking about that a little later on. Don't think I'm overly prepared for today's show. Today I decided to be very, very casual with the program today, and I guess that's what it's going to be. I am prepared for the health care when they come on. Couple of notes here. Number one, something I often comment on. I see that the four top Republican presidential candidates have decided to skip a long-planned forum next week on African-American issues. And that just proves one more time that Rudy Giuliani, John McCain, Mitt Romney, and Fred Thompson don't give a damn about issues with the black folks, and the Republican Party in general does not give a damn. They just don't. Talk about an insult. Even Newt Gingrich says he thinks it's a big mistake for them to skip those issues, and I agree. I truly believe that it is a big mistake. Oh, yes, and someone just sends me an email and says, oh, I'm interested in O.J. Simpson. His book, what's it? If I Did It. To go back to that story, If I Did It. Now, here's a guy that has a ghostwriter write a story about a murder he says he didn't commit, but if he did, this is how he would have done it. Is that what that book is about? And it's selling so well. This says it's number one on the bestsellers list. Could that possibly be that O.J. Simpson would have a best-selling book he didn't even write about something he says he didn't do, but if he did, this is how he would have done it? Oh, my God. And I also want to mention, I got a ton of email mentioned this the other day, especially for you Floridians. Jeb Bush has lambasted Charlie Crist and the new Republican administration here in Florida for the way things are going with the insurance industry. Now, Jeb Bush is a man who let this get out of hand. Jeb Bush is where this whole thing grew up here in Florida. Jeb Bush and his administration allowed the insurance company to go crazy and charge the public whatever they want to. He allowed them to have the massive profits they've had run out on paying claims that they were supposed to pay. Thousands of claims still being contested here in Florida and all around the Gulf Coast in America. You talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Jeb Bush is a very dangerous man. And he's a very dangerous man because the guy does have charisma, unlike his idiot brother, who's the president of the United States. And it always scared me that if a guy like Jeb Bush, who actually has charisma, can talk and has a brain, if a guy like him would get to be president with his ideas and his neocon radical ideas, oh my God, we'd really be in trouble. At least to be able to keep Junior Bush in some kind of check because he's an idiot. And Jeb Bush is not an idiot. A very smart guy. And I tell you truthfully, it worried the hell out of me for a long time that the guy might be running for president and most likely would have gotten it had his brother been able to do anything right in his administration. There's little question in my mind that Jeb Bush would be the leading candidate for president right now if Junior Bush had any semblance of normalcy in his administration whatsoever. So at least that is something that's out right now. I don't have to worry about another Bush being president of the United States, and thank God for that. We are faced with another Clinton possibly being the president of the United States. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about Bush Clinton? Do you think we're getting too far afield with all of that? Are we obsessed with the Clintons? And we haven't talked about that for a long time. What do you think about Hillary Clinton? Do you think she'll win? Do you think she should win? Are you happy with her stance on the war? I don't have to tell any of you listening that if you've been listening to the show for a while now, that although I like Hillary Clinton and I like many things she stands for, I have certainly painted myself into a corner, and I do not apologize for doing so, that I cannot back her for the presidency and will not. I made a vow a long time ago, and I will stick to it no matter what. I made a vow a long time ago that I will back no one for president who A, voted for the war, or voted for the war and hasn't apologized for it and said it was wrong. And as yet, Hillary Clinton has not said that it was the wrong thing to do. She's made all kinds of excuses. She's danced. She's circled all around it, but she has not apologized. And until I hear an apology from her that she was wrong and did the wrong thing and voted for that war and was suckered and it was just a plain wrong vote, I cannot back her for the presidency of the United States. So that's how it is here. How do you feel? What if it comes down to Hillary Clinton and a Rudy Giuliani? What if? Will you... I don't want to use the word the lesser of two evils because I do not feel that Hillary Clinton is evil. Most certainly I do not. But I'm the kind of guy that is stubborn, call it stubborn if you will. I said that a long time ago about not being able to back anybody that backed this war and hasn't apologized for it, and I'll stick to it no matter what. So I better work real hard for Dennis Kucinich, huh? Or one of the other candidates that's not in the same shoes boat with Hillary right now on that thing. Or maybe she'll come around, and it would please me to no end if Hillary Clinton would come around and say, you know what? I made a big mistake. I was wrong. I apologize to my constituency. I apologize to Democrats all across America, and I apologize to the American public. I'd like that. Hey, we're going to hear this little word from Georgie Bush, and we'll be back in a minute.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week we heard from the great General Petraeus, a key member of what I like to think of as my inner flim-flam team. And he outlined the success of my surge strategy in Iraq and recommended reducing troops to pre-surge levels, all while guaranteeing continued victory. Now, some say that we are not winning the war on terror. They have numbers that show that the troop deaths have actually been on the increase, that Al-Qaeda is more powerful than ever. But these facts are misleading. General Petraeus is using a more straightforward approach to these numbers, but one that is slightly advanced and many may not understand. Now, what he has done is he's counted the Iraq troop deaths that happen each week, not counting friendly fire, of course, or accidents, or shots to the side of the face, or any acts of violence taking place after 3 p.m. on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays, or Sundays between 8 and 10. He adds those up in one column and then divides by the number of sectarian bombings, not counting Sunni on Sunni bombings, Shiite on Shiite bombings, or Shiite on Sunni or Sunni on Shiite bombings. Then he puts all that over pi to the 12th power. Then he counts the seconds between bomb blasts and the cries of panicked civilians in the marketplace, then divides by the troops, and then square roots by 100. And these are just common sense numbers. What he comes up with in the end is that we can win with a 3% drop in troop size. That's what those numbers add up to. 5,000 less troops. And that's our key to victory this time. Because you can clearly see with these numbers that we're going to get a 7% drop in terror. And that's pretty good. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. To request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
You know, I just hate to do this. I just hate to do this. I really do. I want to take exception with something that Agnes Kincaid, the grand dame of Head On Radio Network, the one that takes care of us all. I want to take exception with something she says in that Head On Radio Network ad. I do. She mentions in there the other liberal radio network. We are the liberal radio network. Everybody on this network espouses liberal views. Okay? Everybody. So, Agnes, she knows the spirit I mean that in as well. We are the liberal network. Speaking of the liberal network, did y'all hear about that fight, so-called scuffle that Eddie Schultz was involved in? Somebody gave him a little trouble in a bar. I guess he was in there drinking beer, and someone made a couple of disparaging remarks about Eddie, and Eddie got into a little shoving match there, and don't know what all happened, but I guess that it didn't actually come to fisticuffs, but it was reported that Eddie was in a shoving match, so there you go. Probably the least liberal of anybody who claims to be liberal, Eddie Schultz. There I am taking a shot at Ed Schultz again. Wouldn't he love that? He does love it when I mention that. But Eddie, I got you pegged, bud. I do. Give us a call, 866-546-5254. And speaking of telephones, let's head on over to the phone right now. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
Don't count Jeb out.
Jeb, I hope he's out.
Well, I mean, let's don't be too sure. You know, Romney said he would consider him to be his vice presidential nominee.
Wow. You know, that would be interesting to see if Jeb Bush could really pull that off after.
Well, it's like you say, a lot of people, they just see that he's educated and can talk, and some people think she's charming. I don't, but they think, well, he might be pretty good. He might be more like his daddy.
Yeah, well, he probably is more like, he's the smartest one of the bunch. I don't think any doubt about that. The guy's pretty slick.
But don't count him out.
And it fascinates me. I know you live in Florida, as do I, and it always fascinated me how so many people over in Florida gushed over Jeb Bush, uh-huh. what a great governor he was, and look at the mess we're
terrible.
In here.
Yeah.
Terrible. He left the governorship here in much the same way his brother's going to leave the presidency. He's handing over a terrible mess to the next guy.
And he's like his brother. Every business he's been in, it's failed.
Oh, yeah.
Just then, he's always been bailed out.
But they always end up with a pocket full of cash, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
That's the way it works.
But you know how Bush said that our troops were kicking you-know-what over
right
there? Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Well, that's also his Jeb's favorite word too.
Hmm.
That's what he said one time when he did away with the affirmative action here in Florida.
He did away with everything he could. He gave his rich buddies a nice state tax cut. I mean, we don't have state taxes, but they gave him tax cuts in other ways on their yachts and
just a lot of stuff. And if he doesn't like something, he said, "Get their you know what out of here."
Hmm. Yeah, well.
But, and Also, did you hear about the latest Republican in problems with pedophilia?
No. Is there another one?
Oh, this is about a five-year-old girl.
Man, they're not going to have room on the prison bus for any more of them here before long.
He's like assistant state attorney, I believe.
For Florida?
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't have his name available, but it's in Buzzflash.
Oh, we'll have to find out about that.
Anyway, they caught him in a sting. He traveled all the way, I believe it was to Minneapolis, to have sex with a five-year-old girl.
Oh.
And the policewoman, she was the one, he told her to tell the little girl that she was going to meet a nice man and to give her a lot of presents.
Oh, man.
And he told her, said, you know, said, you just have to be real gentle with him. He said, I've done it many times before.
There's a lot of sick puppies out there, isn't there?
So, if I look up his name and you want me to go ahead and email it to you?
Sure, go ahead. We'll be glad to give him all the publicity he deserves.
Yeah, this is the latest. Somebody said, is any of them right?
Yeah.
If any of them in that party, right?
Well, you begin to wonder after all the things that have come to light lately. And
yeah.
Oh, my.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go.
Thanks for calling, Juanita. Good to hear from you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And I see that the restroom up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that Senator Larry Craig, Republican from Idaho, I see the restaurant that he frequents has now become kind of a tourist mecca. Yes, I mean it. Yes, I'm not kidding. They're reporting that there are a lot of people going to see that restroom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, I think it would be a good idea to really do it up nice. And like on the restroom door there, paint something nice or put a plaque on the door. The Larry Craig Memorial Stall, they could put it like with his nickname, Larry Widestance Craig, and put a nice plaque on the door there. Maybe a nice shiny black brass plate, and maybe one outside too, so that the people walking by could tell that this is the restroom where everything happened. If they're going to do it upright. They could sell postcards there at the airport, set up a little stand right outside that men's room there and sell, sell rolls of toilet paper with Larry Craig's face on the strips. And, you know what I mean? They're doing it kind of halfway, if you ask me. And I think if they're going to do it, they ought to do it right. Oh, God, you're so mean. I can't help it. When people are so holier than thou, I am not holier than thou. I've committed as many sins, I suppose, as the next guy, and I don't sit here saying, "Oh, I'm such a great guy." And we all do our share of things that are wrong. I mean, we haven't robbed banks and killed people or anything, but so many of these people are so sanctimonious that I'm so perfect and so great and all that. But most of us are just human, you know, warts and all. And yet, so many of these Republicans that have gotten caught, they've been such family values people, such wonderful people, good, upright, upstanding citizens, they would have us believe. Until nightfall, and another thing. Well, in Larry Craig's instance, in broad daylight, actually, or under the fluorescent lights of the restroom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. God, what a thing to get caught for. Can't imagine that. I think I might have mentioned on the show one time, how would you ever in your life, ever again? And I see an email coming. No, don't start that with me. It's got nothing to do with homophobic or anything like that. It's got to do with the public, making a public spectacle of yourself. How would you ever again in your entire life look anybody in the face, knowing damn well that person was looking at you, no matter what you were talking about? If you were talking about the budget deficit or the war in Iraq or anything, knowing that person looking at you was going, this is Larry Craig. This is the guy that got caught picking up toilet paper off a public restroom floor, he says, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and playing footsie with the guy next to it. Oh, man, how do you, I don't know how you live with that. I really don't. Well, I should get serious here today. I really should. And so I'm going to do that right now. We're going to pause for a moment. We'll get one of our guests on the line, and we'll be back.
Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air, tell people everywhere. We the people here don't want war. Hey there, Mr. Black Man, can you hear me? I don't want your diamonds or your game. I just want to be someone known to you as me. And I will bet my life you want the same. Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air, tell the people everywhere. We the people here don't want a war. 700 million, are you listening? Most of what you read is made of lies. But speaking one to one, ain't it everybody's son? To wake to in the morning when we rise. Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air, tell the people everywhere. We the people here don't want war. Brother Solzhenitsyn, are you busy? If not, won't you drop this friend the line? Tell me if the man who is plowing up your land has got the war machine upon his mind. Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air, tell the people everywhere. We the people here don't want a war. Now no doubt some folks enjoy doing battle, like presidents, prime ministers, and kings. So let's all build them shelves where they can fight among themselves. Leave the people be who love to sing. Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before.
And here we are back with the Guy James Show. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us today on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I hope it's nice where you are as well. It's certainly a beautiful day here in Southwest Florida and our listening area all across the country. As promised, wanted to talk about the new Hillary Care plan. That's what I call it, Hillary Care, that came out earlier this week. And wanted to get some expert commentary on it. And we have solicited the help of Professor David Himmelstein. He's the Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School. And welcome to the program, David.
Thanks for having me.
Interested in what you have to say, because you are at a what we would call a, many people would call a liberal university. Most of the Ivy League schools, I think, are called liberal universities. That's what the right commonly demonizes these liberal professors and institutes of higher learning. And yet I can tell and have heard that you are not particularly enamored with Hillary Clinton's health care plan. Would you care to expound upon why?
No, I think she's basically sold out to the insurance industry on this one. She wants to keep the private insurance companies running our health care system. In fact, she wants to ship them tens of billions of dollars in new federal money in order to keep them in charge. Plan that she's proposing won't work. It'll cost lots of money, pump up the dollars in the health care system, but still leave lots of Americans uninsured. And for most middle-class people who are uninsured today, what she's really telling them is, we're going to pass a law that says you have to go out and buy coverage, but we're not actually going to give you the help you need.
The problem I have here is that Hillary, back in, what, 92, 93, was spearheading this plan to get a national health care program, and, of course, it was turned down. It never made it to fruition, never came to fruition. How does this plan now differ between then and now? Because I've talked to so many people who think, well, Hillary's a liberal Democrat, and which I don't really think she's a liberal Democrat, but I think she's more of a centrist than anything. But a lot of people think this is going to be a national health care program, that everybody's going to have health care, and it's just everything going to be, you know, just fine. This differs tremendously from that plan back then, doesn't it?
Well, it differs some from that plan back then, but frankly, I was critical of that plan as well. This plan, I mean, it's a little strange to call her a liberal Democrat on this plan. This plan is, if anything, more conservative than what Richard Nixon proposed in 1972. So she's gone from national health insurance that the Democrats were pushing for 50 years to saying basically the government's role is to tell you you have to have insurance coverage and to give a little bit of help to poor people, but for the middle class, she's going to leave them mostly on their own and just say you have to buy it.
How do you think that she's planning on, I mean, this isn't going to fly with the left. I mean, I think we know that with the left. Maybe the center it will, I'm not sure. But how do you think politically that she thinks this is going to fly?
Well, I think the Democrats realize that they have to have something to say about health care because Americans are desperate about health care nowadays. And she wants to say something, but she doesn't want to say anything that's going to offend anyone. So she's put out a plan that's not offensive in terms of it certainly won't offend the insurance companies. It certainly won't offend the drug companies. It certainly doesn't bring charges of big government. The only thing it doesn't do is it doesn't solve the problems in the healthcare system, but it may look like it's going to solve the problems. I think that's what her hope is she can create the impression that she's going to do something, even though really she's not.
Well, she makes some pretty big claims in it. I've got the whole package sitting here, America's Health Choices Plan by Hillary Clinton. And number one, she says she's going to offer new coverage choices for the insured and the uninsured to try and get coverage for the entire 47 million people who aren't covered right now. And you're saying that she's just going to make it mandatory for everybody to have insurance? And
all right. Well, she's going to offer new choices, but the premiums aren't going to be very different. So, I mean, it's great to say you're going to have a choice of a different insurance company, but my problem isn't which insurance company I buy my coverage from at this point. It's that none of them are offering reasonable rates. None of them are actually doing a reasonable job, and they're all wasting huge amounts of money on paperwork and bureaucracy and outrageous incomes for their CEOs, which ought to be going for health care.
You sound a little bit sympathetic to the Michael Moore stance on this.
I am.
And that's what I was getting at here. The for-profit health care system that we have in this country, I know you're the co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program. What kind of a program are you backing, and how would it differ from what Hillary has planned here?
I'm saying basically we ought to go to expand Medicare to cover everybody in this country and upgrade Medicare because it's been chipped away at and undermined in a lot of ways. But basically to say everybody ought to have insurance just the way everybody ought to have fire protection. We don't say fire departments ought to be operated by private companies in this country. And I don't think the insurance system for healthcare in this country ought to be operated by private companies. We ought to have private hospitals, private doctors, that I'm in favor of. But insurance, everybody needs it. Government is more efficient at it than private companies on this. We know that Medicare runs for 3% overhead and private insurance is about 15% overhead. That's the way we ought to go.
We constantly hear those on the right who are against us, against a national health care program, a single payer, whatever kind that we come up with, constantly denigrating the systems in England and France and Canada. Can you speak to that? What is the truth on the systems they have? And again, I remember we talk about it as we use the word, and we've all fallen into that trap, as benefits. I think it's a right, and not a, it shouldn't be a benefit. It should be a right. Can you speak to the other countries who have a nationalized health care?
I certainly agree with you on that, and I think what I'd say, for instance, about Canada, Canada has a good program, but they don't spend enough on it. So they're only spending half as much per person as we are. And if you're only going to spend half as much, you've got to have some things that you leave out, and that's what Canada has done. But you take Canada's program and double the amount they're spending, you'd have the best healthcare system in the world. And that's what we ought to do at this point, is basically take their system and say, yeah, they have some, they don't have enough MRI machines. Well, we spend enough to have all the MRI machines we need. They don't have enough to do the hip replacements quickly on everybody who needs them. But we do spend enough to do that. So I think they've got the right idea, but you cut half our budget, we couldn't do it right either. They do pretty well with what they have. I mean, their infant mortality rate, which used to be higher than ours, after they instituted their program, went lower than ours. Their death rates are lower. They live longer. And Canadians are more satisfied with their care than Americans are, even than insured Americans. Despite not spending enough.
Let me get a little bit technical here, and forgive me. I don't know exactly how to put this, but you talk about spending. If we would spend, if the Canadians would spend what we spend, when you're talking about what we spend, are you talking about all the fat and the waste that's included in what we're spending now? Are you talking about all the money that's spent on excessive fees by many physicians? And are we including all of that in what we spend?
Well, I was, but to be honest, I think we ought to be able to put together a terrific healthcare system that covers everybody and still saves some money. So we're throwing away at this point $300 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars each year on useless paperwork and overhead. And as you said, we're throwing away money on things like stents for people who'd be better off without them, and unnecessary surgery, and some doctors making ridiculous incomes. So if we just said we're going to pay good incomes but not outrageous ones to the people who work in this healthcare system, and we're going to provide everything that we know is useful for people, but we're not going to give them surgery when it's not going to do them any good, we could cover every American for everything we know how to do that's useful and still save probably $100 billion a year.
Well, how do you change what is the... Well, at least the perception that most of us have out here, the people, the perception we have of the medical community right now, and I hate to offend anybody, but, you know, when you call somebody now for an appointment or you have to go see a doctor, you know what the first question is: how are you going to pay me? We don't hear much about the Hippocratic Oath and all that goes with that anymore. First and foremost, we're always talking about money. How are you going to change the mindset, or does it need to be changed, the general mindset of the medical community?
I think the first thing you do is you take the money off the table when the patient is in the room. You say, look, that's not something for you to talk about with your patients. That's something, I mean, as they do in Canada, the doctors negotiate with the government what their fee schedule is going to be, and that's what they get paid. And there's never a conversation about it between a doctor and a patient in Canada. That's a non-issue, and we ought to make it a non-issue in this country.
What percentage of the people in the medical field feel that way, I wonder?
Well, we did a survey a couple years ago, and about 60% of doctors favored national health insurance, and most of them said they were prepared to pay to trade 10% of their income, of their gross income, for a reduction in their paperwork. And doctors are just fed up with the system we're working in now, and not every doctor, but the majority of my colleagues would tell you, just let me do my work and give me a solid, secure income, and I'll be happy.
We see a lot of doctors now going to work for, well, here I live in the Fort Myers, Florida area, and a lot of the doctors go to work now for the clinics owned and operated by the big healthcare system here because they no longer have to do their own paperwork. They no longer have to file the insurance forms and all that. Is that a countrywide plan the way things are going right now? Is it that way all across the country?
Yeah, more and more doctors are shifting to becoming employees, and I think for those who want to do that, that's fine. There are a lot of doctors who don't want to do that but don't see any choices. And frankly, under national health insurance program that's reasonable, doctors who wanted to stay in private practice could, and I think a lot of patients would prefer that as well.
You mentioned somewhere that this is a lot like the Hillary plan, is a lot like the Michael Dukakis plan and the Mitt Romney plan that's falling apart. Why is it falling apart?
Well, the Romney plan in Massachusetts basically did what Hillary says she wants to do. It said to people, you have to go buy insurance. But for 250,000 people in our state, it said, you're on your own. Just go and buy it. And the state set up a brokerage to help them find coverage, but the state's not helping them buy it, and only 2% of those people have actually come forward and said, yeah, we're going to buy it up till now. We'll see. A year from now, they're going to start getting big fines for the coverage they're supposed to have. But for a couple my age, the state is telling us, go out and spend $8,500 on an insurance plan that still has a $5,000 deductible. So you're $13,000 out of pocket before you get any benefits from your insurance plan. For a couple that's making $45,000, $50,000 a year, that's just not a viable way to go about it.
Is it actually that way? I mean, someone making $50,000 a year in Massachusetts is going to have to pony up $8,000, $8,500 for a health care plan?
Yes.
Oh, well, then it's not a surprise that people aren't signing up for it.
Yeah, I mean, that the law says you have to, and come tax time, 8-10 months from now, they say they're going to start fining people. We'll see whether they're really going to move forward with a $2,000 fine for someone for not buying an insurance policy they can't afford. I mean, at this point, the law in Massachusetts says there's a bigger fine for not buying health insurance than there is for beating your wife or driving drunk. And I'm just wondering whether the legislature is going to go through with that, or more likely what we'll see is what happened with the Dukakis plan 20 years ago, that when push came to shove, they said, it's not working, we're going to have to repeal it.
Mm. And yet Mitt Romney's running on this. It's a feather in his cap he's using out on the stump. Hard to figure. And, of course,
yep.
The public isn't educated on it as they need to be. Do you know anything about the plan that Dennis Kucinich has put forward?
I think the Kucinich plan is basically what I'm talking about. He's saying we should have national health insurance and what's called a single-payer plan, or Medicare for all. And I think that's basically the direction we ought to go.
Well, a lot of people think so, and I know if Dennis could get some traction on that, he'd get a lot of support behind it, particularly if people were more educated. That's why we had you on the program today, to help help educate people on this. That's our mission on this program is education. And here we find that this plan that Mitt Romney has trumpeted so loudly and proudly is falling apart in Massachusetts. And the Hillary plan, well, do you think... Well, it's not going to get off the ground if she doesn't get elected, so she's got to get that done first. It just seems like a huge bureaucratic nightmare that I've read through as much of it as I can today, and I have to agree with you. I don't see the benefit for the average American in it. I certainly don't.
No, I think that essentially for the middle class, most of America, she offers nothing.
And the middle class, basically, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that the group suffering the most right now with the health care?
Well, the poor and middle class both. I mean, it's hard to say which one is more, but certainly the middle class is suffering. We did a study back a couple of years ago interviewing people in bankruptcy courts, and those are mostly middle class people filing for bankruptcy, and half of them filed for bankruptcy because of medical bills or illness. And most of those people actually had insurance. So, you know, three-quarters of the people in medical bankruptcy had insurance, at least when they first got sick. So we have a healthcare system that's not working for uninsured people, but it's also not working for many people with insurance.
Well, I know that firsthand. It's not hard at all nowadays if you have a big medical problem to have insurance, and when you're dismissed from the hospital finally and get back on your feet, just the bills start rolling in, and you can be left with $12,000, $15,000, $20,000, even if you're covered. And that's for the average working guy that, like you say, that pushes them right into bankruptcy. There's a tremendous amount of that.
Yep.
You saw the movie Sicko, I assume.
I did.
It opened a lot of people's eyes. I hope a lot more people see it. I mean, they're in true Michael Moore fashion. He did a little grandstanding in there and all, but I couldn't find anything in it that was a lie. Could you?
No, I think it was pretty accurate portrayal of our healthcare system and a reasonable portrait of ones in other countries, as far as I know, as well.
Now, in typical Michael Moore fashion, he puts a real downer on you and then throws something a little funny in to bring you back up again. But the movie was very depressing, but right on, as far as I can see.
Yeah, and reasonably entertaining, I thought.
Yes, he has a way about him. Well, you have a website, the Physicians for National Healthcare, where people can go and take a look at what you recommend?
We have two that I'll suggest people go to. One is the PNHP.org. That's like in Physicians for a National Health Program, PNHP. And the other is one that we worked with Michael Moore on called SickoCure.org, SickoCure.org.
No, I found out something. I didn't know you were working with him on that. That's excellent. Good,
yep.
Good to know. Professor, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. We value your opinions, and to let you know for sure, we're going to have somebody on in a few minutes that's going to go the opposite way and tell us how much they like this program. So it's good to hear your side first, and we don't want to misinform anybody, and I'm very happy to have heard your opinion and have you share them with us.
Well, thanks very much, and it's what makes America great, that people from all opinions get to talk.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.
Professor David Himmelstein, Himmelstein, I said that wrong. He's the Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School, not just any medical school. And I've read a lot of what he's written about all this, and he knows of what he speaks. And I so respect physicians who speak out against the health care plan and what we have now. I mean, in essence, they're in many cases taking money out of their own billfolds. But I do respect that. When they see what's wrong with the system and have the ethics and the morality to understand that medicine is not a benefit, it is a right. It is part of what we should guarantee one another in this society. When a physician speaks out that way, I have immense respect for them, immense respect. It's so easy for a lot of physicians to say, oh, no, let's keep raking it in. And a lot of physicians do make a tremendous amount of money. But there are others, and I don't want to say that all those making a lot of money don't have the patient in mind, because I know a lot of them do. But you know as well as I do, when you have to get involved with the healthcare system that we have today, it's, oh, my God, usually. And I don't care if you are insured. You still, many times, you're going to end up with bills that you just cannot afford. You're going to end up with prescriptions that you cannot afford, even after your copay in many cases. And I don't want to indict the entire medical community on this. That's not my aim here. I guess on this, I am a true liberal. I am a true liberal, and that's the real liberal in me coming out. There's none of this pull yourself up by your bootstraps and let's just all go buy health care like I do and all that, and everything will be fine. As he mentioned, in Massachusetts, for example, $8,000 for somebody that has a couple of people that have a $50,000 income, that's not affordable. That's not something people can do. You can't spend 20% of your income or so on medical care. Not in these days. It can't be done. And so something better has to come up. And I encourage you to read this Hillary healthcare plan. And of course, we're going to talk a lot more about it after the top of the hour. We're going to have a gentleman with us that's going to Eric Locke, the research director at Campaign for America's Future, going to talk about the Hillary healthcare, and we'll get his opinion on it. I frankly don't know just exactly how he feels about it, but I do know some, and it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say. And I thank the professor for being on the program today. It is hard. Well, not in his case it isn't, but it's many physicians find it very difficult to speak out against the health care program. People look down their noses at them, especially if they have a affiliation with Michael Moore, and you know how Michael Moore's been demonized by the right, and I mean demonized, next to George Soros, or maybe even ahead of George Soros. I don't know anybody that's been demonized any more than Michael Moore. I greatly respect his work, and I have seen all the movies that he's done and so forth, and he's got a way about doing it that smacks you right in the face. Every time you sit down and watch one of his movies, his documentaries, whatever you want to call them, they do. They hit you right in the face with truth, and some of it's very hard to accept, and you sit there and you don't want to accept it. But when you start checking his facts and figures, you usually find out that Michael Moore's been right on the button. And yes, he may be a disagreeable character. He might be someone that personally you don't like. You don't like how he looks. You don't like how he acts. But I'll tell you this. No matter how you feel about the guy personally, his work has been right on. And it's been important. It's been damned important. Amazingly important. And I thank him, and I thank people like David Himmelstein, Physicians for a National Health Program. And do check that out, PNHP.org, and SickoCure.org. You'll find, I didn't know he had that one there. I knew the PNHP.org, but not the SickoCure.org. That one there caught me a little off guard. 866-546-5254. I guess if you're going to call, wait till after the top of the hour now. We're getting a little close to the top of the hour. I'm so disappointed in the Senate today. I mentioned it earlier. So disappointed in their vote, 56-43, to restore the detainees' rights to challenge their detention in the U.S. custody. And that's something that have far-reaching effects on all of us. And I'm just disgusted. Of course, we had, I don't want to say we had a defection, because Joe Lieberman really isn't a Democrat. He voted with the Republicans, of course. I would love for his colleagues to stand up and say, Joe, we don't want you anymore. We don't want to caucus with you. We don't want you. We don't need you. We don't want you claiming to be a Democrat. We don't want you going home in your home state and claiming to be a Democrat. Wink, wink, I'm a Democrat, but I'm going to run as an independent. We don't need that from him. And it's got nothing to do with party. It has nothing to do with party. It has to do with a man being an out-and-out liar and hypocrite. That is what Joe Lieberman is. And I will always say that the biggest mistake Al Gore ever made in his life, and I love Al Gore to pieces, you know I do, but when I heard he was putting Joe Lieberman on his ticket, I could not believe it. I said, there's a killer to the ticket right there. I don't know. I don't have any figures as to the effect of Lieberman on the ticket, but I will absolutely assuredly say this. There are a hell of a lot of people that Al Gore could have picked that would have been much more beneficial to that ticket than him. I just have always hated the fact that Al Gore picked Joe Lieberman, and I still have never heard a good enough reason for it. Still haven't. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We're going to talk about health care some more when we come back. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. 3 days after the foreign minister of France raised the possibility of war with Iran over their nuclear enrichment program, Tehran's government spokesman said today that his country, quote, would use all our means to defend ourselves, end quote. Analysts fear Iran would possibly mine the Strait of Hormuz, thus impeding oil shipments. Another spokesman from Tehran said that supporters of the, quote, Zionist regime, end quote, will get a response from Iran during the World Quads Day rallies held on the last Friday of Ramadan as a forum for Islamic opposition to Zionism. This year, that is October 12th. The Iranian Air Force said it has drawn up plans to strike back at Israel if Israel makes a, quote, silly mistake. Israel has threatened to cut off life support to the Gaza Strip, justifying the move by saying that Hamas is a terrorist organization that took control of the Gaza Strip in June, engaging in hostile activity against the State of Israel. Hamas sees the maneuver as a declaration of war. The UN and the US are remaining cautious, citing the innocent Palestinians who'd be caught in the crossfire. U.S. civilians have been confined to the Green Zone following the Iraqi government's suspension of Blackwater, the embassy's private security force. Blackwater mercenaries are under investigation for Sunday's battle in Baghdad that left 20 civilians dead. It was sparked when a car bomber advanced on a State Department convoy being protected by Blackwater. The Bush administration will name two senior officials today to head up new posts created to improve the admission of Iraqi refugees into the U.S. Right now, the process takes 8 to 10 months. The White House says that's too long. Some 50,000 Iraqis a month are fleeing their country. The most senior surviving member of the Khmer Rouge has been charged for his alleged role in the deaths of some 3 million people in the mid to late 70s. The elderly man was known as Brother Number Two, the right-hand man to Pol Pot. He is now being detained until his trial for war crimes and crimes against humanity. At his arraignment in Las Vegas this morning, O.J. Simpson had 10 felony counts read to him. His bail was set at $125,000, and he was ordered to surrender his passport. Simpson was arrested for his alleged participation in an armed robbery at a Las Vegas hotel room of valuable sports memorabilia. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business next.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has announced the biggest package of grants ever to fight tuberculosis. The philanthropy's recent $280 million commitment boosts the foundation's total to $740 million. TB kills almost 2 million people a year. Roughly one-third of the world's population is infected with the bacteria, which is resurging in regions where it was once wiped out. The recall of Dole packaged lettuce has expanded to 9 states. Canadian authorities discovered the salad mix tested positive for E. coli. Dole says no illnesses have been reported. Adobe Systems reported its quarterly profits more than doubled as a result of a 41% jump in revenues. Quarterly sales of $851.7 million set a record for the Silicon Valley-based company. In August, wholesale prices fell by 1.4%, the steepest decline in 10 months. Financial markets around the world reacted with enthusiasm to the Federal Reserve's rate cut yesterday. Strong gains were registered in London, France, and Germany. The Hong Kong market rose. Japan's Nikkei closed up 3.7% on the news. Japan's investors keep a keen eye on the U.S. economy because it's Japan's largest export market. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is up 87 points at 13,826. The NASDAQ has gained 15. The S&P 500 is up 10. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
America. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon, all across the country and all around the world. And we've been talking today about healthcare so far. And among other things, but mostly about healthcare today. And right now, I'd like to welcome Eric Lotke. He's the research director for the Campaign for America's Future. And I know he has read over the Hillary healthcare plan. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hello there.
We are concentrating on healthcare on the program today, something that's on the mind of many millions of Americans, particularly the 47 million or so that are uninsured. Have you had a chance to look over the new Hillary? I call it Hillary Care. Have you had a chance to look over the new plan?
I have had a chance to look at it. Hillary Care is often a derogatory term the conservatives talk about, Soviet-style Hillary Care, as if it's bad. And this plan is not bad.
Okay, and let me just tell you, we are, of course, a liberal Democratic show. In fact, I remember, I think I met you at the Take Back America conference this year. We were there on Radio Row. We had Professor David Himmelstein on the program. He's a member of the Physicians for National Health program, and he had the contrary view to the Hillary program. I'd like to find out where you differ. First of all, everybody's going to have to be involved in this, right?
Right.
And is it everybody's going to pay a premium?
Right.
The thing is it going to be affordable?
These are good questions, and I don't want to back off from my positive beginning, but I don't want to act as if that's the end of things either. The reason I'm positive, not just about Hillary's plan, but about Obama and Edwards and all the rest of it, is the Democrats as a crew, generally speaking, are saying there is a health care problem in America. It costs too much. Families can't afford it. Businesses may or may not make it an employment benefit, and they're doing it less and less. Costs are high. Coverage is low. 45 million uninsured. All the rest of it. You know the drill. And the Democratic candidates are saying this is a problem. We need to fix it. And the major contenders are coming up with plans that are actually or within spitting distance of universal coverage. And this is really good. This is acting like grown-ups. These are mature plans that are intended to get everybody covered. And this is a step forward. I think, you know, just a year or two ago, talking about reforming healthcare was sort of like, can we get more kids covered through SCHIP, or can we have electronic records to improve things with the technology? And yeah, electronic records are good, but that's not the problem of healthcare in America. And so I'm kind of happy looking at what's happening in the big picture political sense, that these grown-up candidates are giving us grown-up plans, and I don't want to lose sight of that as we start picking apart the details of the plans or saying this one's better at this or this one's better at that, because yes, there are contrasts and pros and cons as we go, but I think this big picture is really important, that the Democratic candidates are all coming up with responsible plans, and I might add, I hate to be partisan about it, none of the Republicans really are.
Well, we are definitely partisan on this program, and Romney is the only one that's mentioned a health care plan,
and he's backing away from what he did in Massachusetts.
Yes, he is, and there are problems with it there, as a lot of people know. There is the affordability of it is a tough call for a lot of people. We were discussing that earlier in the program today. if you've got an income of around $50,000 a year, you can be faced with $7,000 or $8,000 a year in health care premiums, which isn't affordable to a lot of people.
The big picture that a lot of us want to get to, where we are disappointed by the Democrats, and, you know, having been pretty positive, now I get to turn the corner a little bit, which is they all keep the fundamental role of the mostly health coverage goes through your employer and mostly through the intermediary of the private for-profit insurance company. So that unnecessary middleman stays there. And the insurance company always has an interest in collecting your premiums. They like that part. And as we know, the premiums have gone up 87% since 2000. They like, and their profitability is through the roof as well. So they like collecting the premiums, but they don't like paying out. They have entire staffs of people, staffs on payroll, whose job it is to screen people out. You have a pre-existing condition. This is not covered, or it's only covered, you know, X percent. And so they have entire staffs of people who are excluding folks from coverage. So they collect the premiums. They don't like to pay out. And this is fundamental. This is built into the business model of being an insurance company. And this remains a problem as long as you go through the private insurance company. The Hillary plan does make some efforts to regulate it, make some effort to supervise this inherently bad behavior by insurance companies. It will make her a target of the insurance companies at election time, and then assume that she gets elected, that she enacts the plan basically as written, that she has these regulations of the insurance company, just note how fast we went through those assumptions, she would continue to have friction with the insurance company. They would always try to get out of those regulations. They will always inherently be seeking to have more paid in premiums and pay out less in benefits, which is a bad capitalist incentive. It's not a capitalist incentive along the lines of, if I build a better car, more people will buy it. It's the wrong kind of capitalist incentive.
Well, I think you probably know, and at least it's the consensus among listeners of my show and others that I've listened to. As the people on the left are hoping for a plan. Some sort of a single-payer plan that's affordable for everybody, and that it's not a benefit, that it's a right, which I've always believed that health care is a right and not a benefit. But the thing I see in looking through the Hillary health care plan is how do we attain that and still have a for-profit system in this country? It seems like so much of the care is siphoned off by profit in this country as opposed to some of the other countries.
I think that's exactly right, and that's this private insurance problem. There's a lot to recommend a single-payer plan. There's a lot of benefits to that. You don't have the incentive to cut back on coverage, and you don't have all of the waste of the competing of advertising competition and paperwork and all the rest. There's a lot of good to be said in terms of single payer. The plan that we've been proposing at Campaign for America's Future, we're at ourfuture.org, by the way. So what we've been talking about, ourfuture.org, is something that was developed by Jacob Hacker. He's a professor at Yale. And most of the plans imitate this in one way or another. And these hacker-style plans admit that we're not going to be able to get rid of the private insurance companies, or at least not all at once. But they make a public sector Medicare-like plan available to more people. And that piece of the plan is single payer, universally available, all that good stuff. If you have a job which gives you insurance and you like it, great, you can keep it. If you can't get it through your employer, there's any other problem, this kind of a plan is available to you. And this is in some ways a mix of what we presently have and probably won't get rid of anytime soon, and a Medicare for all single payer kind of plan. I think smart money might guess that what that would mean is that the private plans are then competing with a Medicare-like plan, because you can stay with Aetna, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Cigna, whoever it is, through your employer if you'd like, and you can see what your family premiums are, and you remember last month's battle about getting something paid for. Or you can move into this kind of a plan. We'll call it the Medicare Plus plan, or the, you know, whatever is the public sector plan that is then available. And you pay less, and we expect the experience will be that it costs less in terms of premiums and has better results in terms of how people are covered. So in some ways, a plan that expands some kind of a Medicare-like single-payer system, but also lets the private sector keep its present role, would, I think, over time, I think Cigna would probably lose that competition over time, to put it simply.
One of the things I like about the plan, there's some things I certainly don't like about it, and there's some things I do like about it, and everybody's going to be in the same boat on that. I do think it's important to have the guarantee that you will have coverage available to you, affordable coverage available to you no matter what. With their pre-existing condition, there's not going to be any of this business, oh, I had a heart attack and lost my job and I have to go get another job and I can't get health care anymore. I think in the Hillary plan, they've got that well taken care of, do they not?
Right. I think, right. Not, no matter what in terms of the pre-existing condition, and also no matter where you go. So you can change your job, change your state, that kind of a thing. Portability is also important. And the Hillary's plan does make that available, probably still through your employer, or you can opt into the same benefits plan that federal employees presently have. People who are federal employees have coverage available to them. They pay their share of the premium. Uncle pays a different share of the premium, and they get some choice depending on exactly where they are. They get some choice of the carriers. That would, something roughly like that would be available to every American, no matter what their job or where they are. Now, that's good. That's a genuine increase in availability. I think there would get to be some problems with it. Some people who are, for example, a federal employee they've passed a screening. They got hired. They're right there. It says something. You can make some, I hesitate to say it, you know, some assumptions about their health. The homeless people, the sick people, the people who are, you know, too sick to hold a regular job, are more expensive to cover. And so, and also presently are completely uninsured. So that kind of a thing presents a danger because the risk pool opens up. As more people get covered who presently have problems, and that's bad for the cost curves.
Sure.
And so the insurance companies, you know, they won't like that.
Well, that's a given. They certainly won't. I noticed one of the things, politicians are always good at selling their ideas and their plans, and I noticed one of the things that Hillary has used in her plan, in fact, it states right on it, I'm looking from here, where is it? Oh, is choose from the same quality private health care options that members of Congress enjoy. Well, I think the average American is going to look at that after all we've heard and say, wow, I can get the same quality health care that my congressman gets, and I've heard that that's the best in the world. So that's a pretty good sales tool right there.
Right, that's a good sales tool, and this is the one that's available to the federal employees. They have access to that same plan. And I might add, that plan that members of Congress and federal employees presently have is quite a good plan. It's as good a plan as a good private company plan might be. Some businesses have good health care plans, and millions of Americans are excluded, but millions of Americans presently enjoy that. And if they like it, they can keep it, or they can opt into this one that's like the federal plan, or for other people who don't have access for whatever reason, there's this Medicare-like plan that's available. So these are systems that are more or less built around choices, and more or less built around not an existential challenge to the present insurance companies, the present employer-based model. You know, it's not saying we're going to put those out of existence at this moment. But it does open a door over time that they might lose competition to the simpler single payer style plan.
We haven't mentioned Dennis Kucinich. Dennis, as you know, has a plan. It differs quite a bit from Hillary's. Have you had a chance to look over Dennis's plan?
I actually don't know that plan outside of the broad outlines.
Okay.
Not for any good reason. So I encourage people to talk about it. His is a single payer style, right?
Yes.
Right, and with all of the single payer advantages, everybody pays into the pot. And then the pot is full of money because everybody paid in, and that money is available to everybody who needs it when they need it. And if you stay healthy till you're 85, congratulations, you've been paying in. And if you got sick when you were a kid, congratulations, that person's money is available to you. It's a big pot. We're all in it together. We all pay in. Healthcare is available for us when we need it. It's really interesting, a Kucinich-style single payer or any of the fully inclusive plans, they're all built around this notion that we're all in it together. We all pay in, we all need it, we all might get sick at any time. And it's different from the Republican plans, which orbit around the healthcare savings accounts, where you can put in tax-deductible money into your health plan, and then you can spend your money when you get sick. Which is silly in a lot of ways. First of all, ideologically, it's you're on your own. You spend your money, which is different from the notion that we're all in it together. But practically, you spending your money from your healthcare savings account, wages are flat and declining these days and have been for years. All your household expenses are going up, from your housing costs, your energy, your fuel, healthcare premiums, all the rest of your costs, are your college tuition, all your costs are going up. People don't have, they can't save that much money, and they're probably not going to save enough to cover their heart attack or their cancer or their car accident. That's just not going to realistically happen. With a healthcare savings account, even if the $50 a month they can afford to put in is tax deductible.
Sure.
And I might add, the richer people get a bigger tax benefit because they're in higher brackets and they can set aside more money every month.
I've been asked to ask you right here, as you all know, if you work for somebody that has health care benefits available. Many employers pay the whole thing. A lot of employers have the employee pay a portion of it. Many times nowadays, from what I'm hearing, about half of it. What do you know about the congressman? How much do they pay for theirs?
I do not know that offhand.
I don't either. Someone caught me completely off guard with that. I don't know if they have to pay a portion of their income for that or not. I suspect the answer is they don't, but knowing
just
what
for,
I...
Just not that it's worth it. I suspect the answer is yes, that they pay a monthly premium, and that depending on what plan detail they opt for, they pay a different monthly premium. That's what I suspect, that they're splitting it in half with uncle or something.
Okay, so
like
you're
that.
Saying you think they do, and I'm saying they don't, and so next year at the Campaign for American Future deal, we're going to have to bet a Coke on this over at the snack bar.
Because fundamentally, I'm saying I don't know offhand. but I just rewind quick with the big picture. I'm happy about where we are in the healthcare debate in America. I feel like we have robust, workable plans that are making an effort to get everybody covered, and I like the single payer Kucinich-style plan. I like that the Obama-Edwards-Clinton plans at least admit some single-payer version and let that single-payer piece beat the private sector pieces in the private market. That's the Jacob Hacker-style plan that we've been talking about. And just in general, I feel much better about the state of politics with healthcare in America right now than I did, let's call it, 2 years ago. Certainly 4 years ago.
Absolutely. It's back on the table again, and no one should suffer under the illusion that just because Hillary Clinton has put out her American Health Choices plan, that doesn't mean that if she gets elected it's going to be done verbatim the way it is. There will be a lot of crafting and honing and adding and cutting here and there. They're not going to just throw this plan on the table and say, here, shove it down your throat. It'll be a lot of Democrats and hopefully some Republicans working on it as well. So people don't need to get and have a hissy fit over some things they like or don't like in the program right now.
I think that's exactly right. That's one reason I'm not comparing and contrasting the plans against each other and nitpicking them. If we think of them as vision documents and efforts to get everybody covered, roughly speaking, like this, I think that's good enough for us to go forward, and let's keep those goals in mind. Universal coverage, fully portable, mechanism for controlling costs, those are the goals. And let's make sure somebody gets elected who can get us there.
Well, the old Chinese proverb, journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, and hopefully we can take that step forward and gradually work ourselves into the point where we have the health care that everybody needs and wants, and is completely affordable to everybody in this country. But it has to start somewhere, and it's definitely, without question, going to start with the Democrats, because we know damn well that the Republicans would never, never act on this on a national basis. Never. I think we know that.
Right. I think that's how we're seeing things.
Yeah. Eric, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. Appreciate it very much. We often have folks from your great organization on the program, and I appreciate your input. And here on the Guy James, your website? Again.
Ourfuture.org.
All right.
Ourfuture.org. Campaign for America's Future.
Got a little plaque sitting right here with that on there. So, hey, thanks so much, Eric.
Thank you.
Yep, bye now. So there you have it. And I think the consensus from talking to the two people we had, one pro, one con, on the program today about the healthcare proposal is the one thing that I get out of this, and is the one thing Eric stressed, and I certainly agree, whether or not you like this Hillary program or you don't, at least it's on the table. At least the Democrats are talking about it. And correct me if I'm wrong, other than Mitt Romney talking about having a health care plan that he was put in up in Massachusetts, I have not heard a Republican candidate talk about health care whatsoever, because it's not the nature of the beast to talk about anything, and they hate it when I say this phrase, and maybe some of you do too. They're not for anything that's for the common good. And as long as I live, I will be for things that are for the common good of our society, for everybody that lives in our society. This division of the rich and the poor in healthcare, most especially in healthcare, is abominable. It's something that never should have been. It's something that cannot stand in this country. We cannot leave this alone. So at least the Democrats are at the forefront of wanting to do something, wanting to make some progress on it. And that, by God, I will promise you, you will not hear on the Republican side of things right now. So whether you like this Hillary plan or whether you don't, whether you're all for Dennis Kucinich's plan or the Obama-Edwards plan or any of those, keep in mind, first and foremost, is at least the Democrats are taking the step. At least they're talking about it. They're willing to talk about it. They're willing to talk about actually doing something about it. And I think you know by now that on the Republican side of things, these neocons, these conservatives, it ain't gonna happen. Not now, not ever, not when hell freezes over. It's never, ever gonna happen. So do keep that in mind, no matter what you think of the Democratic programs coming out. Read them, understand them, and choose your candidates accordingly, knowing that somebody on the Democrat side is going to do something about health care. And eventually, folks, we will get there. You know why? You know why I know we'll get there? Because we have to. We have no choice. We cannot, for the good of this nation, allow this health care system to stay where it's at right now. That simply cannot stand. Well, we're going to pause for a break right now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
But that don't coincide.
And we're back with the Guy James Show. Kind of caught me off guard there. Welcome back to the show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And as promised, I have with us right now, we hope we do anyway, Bill Scherr. Bill, welcome to the program.
Great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Bill has done a lot of writing about, well, Mr. Bush, and a lot of things Mr. Bush said. We call him Junior on his program, Bill. A lot of the things he said that he'd like to forget that he said, I think that everybody over in the Republican side like to forget he said about oil prices and how he and Dick Cheney were so knowledgeable and so well connected in the Middle East region that they were going to do a lot for
bringing down oil prices and so forth. And yet, I haven't seen the market this afternoon. Is it around 80 bucks again today, I wonder?
I believe it still is. You know, in June of 2000, when Junior was a mere governor, he was running for president, you know, the price of oil, the bulk of the Clinton administration was around $20 a barrel. And in mid-2000, it was moving up into the 30s, And so talk of how one would get prices down was prominent. And Bush said that he should be president because, quote, "I would work with our friends in OPEC to convince them to open the spigot, to increase the supply, use the capital that my administration will earn with the Kuwaitis or the Saudis, and convince them to open up the spigot." And he ended that by saying, "The fundamental question is, will I be a successful president when it comes to foreign policy?" That was when oil was at $30 a barrel, and now it's at 80. And so it is the appropriate question to ask. Has he been a successful president when it comes to foreign policy? And, you know, I have a conservative pen pal from my blogging who once confided in me that he fully expected that the invasion of Iraq would lead to cheap oil and gas for us.
That's worked out real well.
I presume that whether you were for the war or against the war, you might have assumed that would be an outcome. You might not have agreed with that as a justification for going, but you have thought that would be a byproduct. But we see that foreign policy notion, which has been advanced by Alan Greenspan said that oil was a proper reason to go in. Senator Dick Lugar has said we should keep a military presence in Iraq to protect oil flows. That's a quote. Larry Craig, you may have heard of him. He has also said that a precipitous withdrawal would hurt our energy supply. So this is an openly stated reason, maybe not the only reason, but openly stated reason for being there in Iraq. But the fact of the matter is, this has not secured our oil supply or given us a stable, affordable oil supply. It's done the opposite. It has destabilized the country and the region, made our oil supply less secure, and jacked up the price. So on energy policy and foreign policy, this has been a total disaster, and it's not just Bush, as we've seen. This is the conservative approach to energy, foreign policy, and national security, and it's just been proven wrong.
Oh, absolutely. And here, once again, the volatility of this particular resource. Once again, today, I just before we went on the air today, we see that the Iranians are threatening to mine the Straits of Hormuz again. That'll do wonders for the price of oil, most certainly. You know, you mentioned about George Bush saying he would get his friends to turn on the spigot. He does have friends over there, doesn't he?
Well, he's still friends with the Saudis, no doubt. He's trying to ply them with more arms as we speak. They're trying to. The whole strategy has been it's not about promoting democracy. It's about picking and choosing your friends. If we can have a democracy with people we like, fine. But if it's a democracy with people we don't like, we give them the hand, like in Venezuela. But dictators in Saudi Arabia, dictators in Pakistan, dictators in Egypt, they're just fine as far as Bush is concerned. So the whole notion that there's any kind of high idealism that is girding this foreign policy approach is bogus. They're giving democracy a bad name by equating this foreign policy with promoting democracy, because it's just the opposite. It's about total narrow self-interest. And when you conduct your foreign policy in that way, you get the opposite. It backfires on you. You destabilize the region. It doesn't serve your self-interest. It doesn't serve the global interest.
Now, you mentioned the word backfire. Do you think, I hate to accuse the Bush administration of ever not being totally forthright with us, but do you think it's possible that they never had any intention of doing anything about this to save the American people a buck or two on their oil cost?
Their motivation has never been what is good for the average American economically. That has never, and the entire conservative philosophy of governance is that's not the business of government to even worry about. And it would be way too charitable to say it's because they have some belief in the free market, because there's no free market here. They are propping up the oil industry and the coal industry with subsidies. They do not operate in a free market. This is just shoveling money into the coffers of their cronies and their buddies. So that is the notion that they have any interest at all of what's of having an economy that works for everybody is, you know, ridiculous on its face.
Wouldn't you think that they would have this cronyism attitude with everybody in the world that had oil for sale? I mean, what's the deal in the Middle East? They, you know, we've all seen the pictures of Bush holding hands with the prince or king or whoever he is now. I lose track of him over there. I'm coming out of from the visit there in Virginia. But we know they've been tight. The Carlyle Group, the Bush administration, the people have been tight with the leaders of the Middle East for a long time now. And yet they look at a guy like Hugo Chavez and tell him to go take a hike, and he's sitting on God knows how much oil there. What's the difference?
I mean, fundamentally, there really is no difference. Except, I mean, I'm not, you know, a Chavez fan, but the fact of the matter is that he was elected and the Saudis weren't. So, you know, democracy is not the criteria here. It's just a question of who do the Bushies feel they can do business with. They see the Saudis as being on the team and Chavez not being on the team. You know, there's no reason why you couldn't do business with a Chavez. You know, Chavez, again, he's by no means a saint. There are definitely concerns about, you know, human rights violations in Venezuela, no doubt. But by no means has human rights been the criteria of the Bush administration that we wouldn't be talking to a whole host of people in the Middle East region. So Chavez is someone that you could have said, hey, you may not be, you know, my type of guy as far as your economic program is concerned, but there's no reason why I can't do business with you. There's no reason, and in fact, we do. I mean, we still get oil from Venezuela. That hasn't stopped. But clearly, that supply is under risk because there's been so much saber-rattling with Chavez, and we've pushed Chavez to make alliances with even more unsavory characters, and that's all been totally unnecessary.
Where do you think this whole oil business is going to go in the Middle East? I mean, it's obvious that with the administration we have now, even maybe looking across the entire government we have now, Democrats, Republicans, no one seems to be all that serious about weaning ourselves off of the stuff. And there's no end in sight. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that it'll go to $100 a barrel within the not-too-distant future. Where are we going with this? Are we going to be fighting wars over oil until the last drop of it's gone, or will we come to our senses sooner or later?
Well, that falls, to some extent, on our shoulders. You know, we have to get engaged. We have to realize that if we don't change our energy policy, that is going to be the result. And we have to put pressure on those in Congress now and on the presidential candidates to make not just lay clear what an energy policy should be, but to push for it and fight for it. You know, we have energy bills pending in Congress right now that get very little attention from the media. And so if they don't get in the media, then you and I don't knock on our Congress members' doors about it. And only voices that get heard in Washington are from the special interests. And they end up dictating the terms of the debate. But you have bills right now in the House and Senate that are a decent first step, but they need to come together so they actually can put on the president's desk. They would mandate a certain percentage of our electricity come from renewable fuels. That's in the House bill. In the Senate bill, we've said it's going to raise the fuel efficiency standards on automobiles. We need to make sure both those provisions stay in the final bill, so it would be a strong bill put on the president's desk. That's just the first step. Then you got to talk about the bigger global warming bills that are in the pipeline, and it's not clear that they will be strong bills or not. So we have to make sure we're pushing and making sure they are strong. So even if they don't get signed by Bush, because we know that's not going to happen, anything that's halfway decent is going to get vetoed. But at least it puts on the table for the public to see that there is a way forward, and they can see who in Washington is obstructing the way forward. And that helps the next round of presidential candidates to build a mandate for a stronger policy come 2009. That's what we have to do.
Just so the American people can get involved. And I can't remember who said it. I'll lay it at the feet of Winston Churchill. He gets blamed for saying almost everything. I think it's something like, and I'm paraphrasing, you can always count on the Americans to do the right thing after they've tried everything else first. And I think that's probably what we're facing here with the oil problem. The SUVs, the gas hogs that we're all driving, nobody wants to give them up. Not enough people do. And it's always the situation here in this country. Well, maybe somebody else will give up their gas hog, but I'm not giving up mine. And
you know, I would actually disagree with that. I think there are lots of people that would be thrilled to have, purchase renewable fuels, thrilled to not have carbon pollution coming out of their cars, happy to purchase new cars that were more fuel efficient if they had the choice. If they had the practical choice that these options were accessible and affordable. You know, when I talk about oil prices going up and how that's problematic, you know, a conservative might say to me, well, you're a hypocrite because you want these prices high so people will then do all the green things that you claim are so great. And I'll say, well, that may be true, except that right now those choices aren't available. So when the oil price goes up through the roof, all it does is just sock the average family in the pocketbook, but doesn't change anything for the environment at all. That's where we are right now. So if we want, if you want to be to end the addiction to oil, which Bush says we're addicted to oil, then he keeps the needle in. He keeps subsidizing the oil and coal, so they get primary treatment, preferential treatment in our economy. That if we end that, if we steer help towards getting renewable fuels online and economically accessible to all, and make sure these cars are available for purchase, and not just, I mean, used to say that no one would buy them. Now Priuses do very well,
sure,
but they're very expensive, and the tax credits are being phased out. So we got to make these things affordable and accessible for people, because I think people do want them, but they need to be able to have the means to access them.
Well, you know, the hardest thing in this whole discussion is it's not over just this. It's over the war, over health care, and certainly over the energy that we're talking about now. We talk about choice. The people do have the choice. The people do have the power. If only they would grab it and run with it and come down hard on these people and say, yes, this is what we want. But so many times we Americans are so guilty of being so apathetic and sitting back and waiting till the last dog has died. And
well, the cynicism is so deep right
now.
Oh,
yes.
I mean, that's what's killing us. I think the apathy, you know, cynicism breeds the apathy. When you think that you have no recourse, that I could knock on these doors and sign these petitions and nothing's going to change, that just makes you want to sit on your hands. And what glimmer of hope that people had after a new Congress was elected in 2006, because conservatives have been obstructing everything and progress hasn't happened as fast as people would like, that's breeding more cynicism right now. And that's what we have to fight against. You know, we stayed engaged and stayed in the game in 2006. We did make a difference. We got rid of some of these rascals that have been screwed everything up. It didn't change everything overnight, however. You have to keep in the game, keep your head in the game, keep pushing. As they say, more and better Democrats is often what we need. And maybe some of these Republicans will come around as well when they see how big the public pressure is coming. You're seeing this on children's health insurance right now. The Senate actually passed a veto-proof bill to get more kids with health insurance, because a lot of these senators realize, I'm not going to go into 2008 being against children. That's crazy talk. The public pressure has been there to some degree. So that's what needs to happen if you're going to have this change occur. And hopefully with some of these successes, hopefully the cynicism can be reduced and the apathy will be reduced at the same time.
Well, that's what your mission is what my mission is, to educate people that they do have the power. They do have the say-so to put in pressure on their congressmen, because that's the only thing the congressmen and our House of Representatives and the Senate listens to is you and me. And if they think we're not going to vote for them, why, that'll spur them to action every time.
That's right.
Bill, you got a website?
Well, I blog at Campaign for America's Future at ourfuture.org, and I also do blogging on my own site, liberaloasis.com.
Okay. Well, we regularly have a lot of the crew from the Campaign for America's Future on here, and in fact, we had Eric Lotke on today.
Oh,
I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. I appreciate it very much, and we'll try and spur everybody on to knock on doors and call their congressman about weaning ourselves from the old black gold. Bill Scherer, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be with you.
Bye now. You know, it is up to you, and it is up to me. And I am as much a cynic as anybody else. I have had my moments lately, and you've heard me express them, that I am discouraged. And I get discouraged, and I know you have as well. And God bless those of you who never get discouraged. I wish I could be like that. I wish I could be an optimist all the time. I am, by my very nature, I am not. I tend to see the glass half empty so much of the time, and it's easy to do in the world of politics. It's easy to be discouraged in the world of politics. I'm very discouraged over our Democratic Congress right now. I fully realize that there's not a lot they can do about some of these issues, but I also know that there's a lot they could be doing that they are not, because they haven't been forced into it. So, well, what are you going to do? We'll just keep hammering away at them, right? Promise me you will. I will, if you will. We'll be back in a minute. Hey, welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along. I'd like to say hello to everybody over on the Head On Radio Network chat room, Agnes and ELO and Jersey and Lorelei and the whole gang over there, Liberal Me and Annette, Cobwebs, big group over there today, and welcome to everybody on the show. We're at about, 5.5 minutes before the hour. Let's go to the phone. We got time to take another call. We got Phil from Daytona. Hello, Phil. How are you today?
Pretty good, Guy. Thanks. On the Hillary care, Hillary is going to serve the corporations first, just as all of these candidates are, except for Kucinich on the Democrat side and I believe Ron Paul on the Republican side. mean, as far as corporate welfare, Hillary is in with the war makers, and what makes you think she's not going to be in with the people funding her on the big business of the medical care side? I think if people haven't figured out that these politicians are not going to serve us before they serve the corporations, man, how ridiculous does it have to get? I think I just remember when Bush and them tried to privatize Social Security, and the American people said F that, you know, loud and clear. And I believe, Guy, that the American people can demand universal health care in the same way. And, you know, it was good you had the guest on, but and I wasn't listening too closely, and I didn't study Hillary's plan. But I know when if she's snowing us on, you know, not doing anything for a law, a war started on lies, she ain't going to do anything for us as far as health care. She's going to take care of the corporate people. And another thing, as far as candidates with these health care plans, I think people better look at the candidates for all issues. And number one, I would think, is getting these kids the heck out of Iraq and getting these corporate war profiteers to stop taking our tax money.
You're right, Phil. And you know what I've said for a long time, and it may not be practical, but it sure sounds good to me. We need another march like took place last Saturday, and we need it to be about 10 or 15 times as big. It needs to surround the Capitol building, and the chant needs to be no more money. No more money from lobbyists of any kind, not a dollar, not 5 cents, nothing. Not a pencil, not a dime from corporate America to go to these Congress critters. Not a single penny. And I think if somehow we could, of course, how are we going to get that done? Because they're the ones voting on it. But we need to demand that the inordinate amount of money that's going to these people from corporate interest is buying their votes, and doesn't matter which side of the aisle they're on, is buying their votes. And you're absolutely right.
And the American people keep voting for these criminals.
And the thing is, Phil, you know, you look at them nowadays and say, which one of them's not taking corporate money?
Dennis Kucinich.
I found Dennis Kucinich a while back. And I'm trying to think who it was. I love Dennis. You know I do.
Yeah.
But he'd taken $1,400 from somebody. I got to look that up. That I about fell over dead when I saw this.
Oh my God.
They all do it, and not some more than others. And of course Dennis is way low on the list of lobbyists. There's no question about that. He steers pretty clear of that. And I don't mean that as an indictment, but I mean they all take some from somebody. And I wish we could. Hey Phil, got to run. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, I understand, Guy.
Good to hear from you.
The California Nurses Association would have a take on this. They're on the front line, and they're the strongest union in the country.
Well, that's half the thing. Get the unions back at it again. Got to run,
thanks,
Phil.
Guys.
Thanks for your call. You know, the unions used to have a huge input into our elections, and they don't anymore. And if you think that's not an intentional thing by the right to get rid of the unions, why, then you're living in la-la land. They've done a great job in destroying the unions over the years. They set out to do it, and they have done it. Hopefully the union movement can come back again, bigger and stronger than ever. I'd love to see that. I would. Oh, the righties hate me for saying that. Hey, thanks for being with us here today on the Guy James Show. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned for another program after this, and Bob a little later on this evening. Don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Join us again tomorrow for another live show, The Guy James Show.